Yeah, no.
Diva.
Hi, Diva. No, truly
speaking, ain't no diva.
Truly speaking of a new hair era, like, it, I don't know if we've remarked on this yet, or maybe it just hasn't become obvious, but only in this episode of this season, which is season 2, episode 11, Evolution, does Carrie remark on the fact that she has straight hair and has for the past few weeks. And it's so funny. It's like, it's she, like me, is embarking on a new hair era.
It was
no one else
weird.
Cares but us. Yeah.
I was like, I just like, I mean, because like Carrie's hair is so iconic to the series that like when she finally upgrades her look, I mean, I would call it a downgrade.
I think she
honest.
Looks good, but I think it's like weird that it's happening like multiple weeks in a row. Like she should have just done it, you know, a couple times, but whatever.
Well, I think it's like kind of creative choice that like things with Big aren't ultimately going to work out. That like she's changing. That like she's changing and he's staying the same, I think, is kind of like the vibe that they're going for.
And that's very much the theme of this episode. So for the folks at home,
welcome to Beautiful Women Updates.
Welcome to Beautiful
Remind
Women
them
Updates.
What we're doing.
Totally. Because it's been 100 years.
It has been 100
years. It's been it's been a really I don't want to get into this now, but it's been an intense few weeks. And so we're recording this now on the evening of Tuesday, October 24th. So it's been a couple weeks since we recorded. And we're coming back with this episode, Evolution.
Yes.
Because Joni, God bless her, was not feeling well last week.
I
took the reins and have done a little bit more of the notes for this week. So I'll be leading this episode, and let's just kick it off with a land acknowledgement. I'm kidding. but truly, it has been politically speaking, it has been a rancid and foul and evil and malignant couple weeks.
100%. Yeah.
And so it's hard to know what to say or what would be appropriate for a podcast with this character. But I think, you know, any opportunity to share a message of solidarity is important. So I'm going to take the opportunity, in every area of our lives. I know this is true of me personally, and I know from the conversations I've had with Joni that this is true for her as well. Like we strive 100%. To be in solidarity with the people of Palestine and in support of resistance We here at Beautiful Women Updates believe that armed resistance is not only a legal but moral right of the Palestinian people and all colonized people, and that one day, hopefully very soon, we will see the fall of the Israeli colonial apartheid regime and freedom for the Palestinian people.
And I mean, I doubt at this point, I've made this so clear on the other podcast as well, as I know you literally have written about this.
Yeah.
I don't want to say to death. That's
no, I've done
right
it a lot.
Here.
It's become the kind of a defining issue for me.
Please never approach either Alex or I with some sort of like Western imperial moral relativism and whataboutism, because
we've done the readings. We're not interested.
We've done the readings, and unlike many people, it seems our support of Palestinian liberation is not contingent on the opinion of the West or people in the imperial core whose taxpayers fund the bombs being dropped on Palestinians. We're not playing whataboutisms. Our support is unconditional, obviously.
Yeah. And it's been really, what's funny is that actually, like, so now we're, you know, allowing this to venture into the territory of this podcast subject matter.
That's
forgive
fine.
Us. But like, I had the thought the other week before October 7th, when Al-Aqsa flood began, that, you know, it would be nice actually to date another Jewish person, because I realized that like this was something that, like, you know, like in other relationships in my life, like other Jewish people, like we come from a kind of place of, like, I don't know, cultural understanding, to the point that I'm like, actually it might make things a little bit more easy. And then of course Al-Aqsa flood began, and then I was like, oh, like, I actually can't date another Jewish person because we're all fucking insane.
I have no opinions.
Yeah, you. But I'm just like, wow. Okay, it's been a big couple weeks for front-facing camera behavior by Jewish people, and I need us to stop immediately. Immediately. Yeah. It is so fucking annoying. And I it's a lot of I and we statements at protests, and it's like, what if you shut the fuck up? Yeah. What if you just did it? Anyway, this is...
I
can't stop complaining about it, but it's a degree of kind of like a solipsism that at this point now just like feels like racism to me. Well, even when well-intentioned.
The time for I and we statements was when you were like 17 in like 2015.
Yeah.
Like,
period.
Sorry, we weren't 17 in 2015. For us, 2012.
I think it's important.
That should be out of your system by now.
I think unlearning is an important and difficult process. And like, I know that like, I grew up in a context of like intense Zionist indoctrination. So like, I understand that that's doesn't necessarily come easily or automatically. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's like, you need to be fucking for real. Like, it's like, okay, like, in what ways are you going to be materially helpful? And like, one of those is not to like center your grief around like the designated human subjects of an empire whose memories are trotted out to justify genocide. Like,
yeah,
literally, like, save that for private. Like, I don't
save
know.
It for private. And I think this goes to say for a lot of things. I mean, that can apply to so many different,
so many things,
political things in
our
lives.
Where it's like, who's the audience?
This isn't for public right now. You're doing this in public, and this should be for yourself.
Yeah.
I was also thinking, you liked one of my tweets about this, and I thought it was interesting because it's not that I like rarely discuss it, but it's just that like, I don't know now, obviously, I know certain people who grew up evangelical, but I don't know a lot of people who like had the kinds of evangelical experiences I had, mostly because I will say I'm normal and I got out of it relatively smarter than most. But like, it was funny and interesting reading some people come around to the understanding that like the Christian West, and especially those in like, you know, empire are like kind of like bloodthirsty for what's happening right now, because they believe it is a sign of Ragnarok and like the beginning of Revelations. Like my parents' pastor, I remember, this is on the podcast.
Wait, Ragnarok, isn't that Norse or what?
No, I just mean I was using
Sorry, I'm like, huh? But then again, my mom the other day
Revelations is the explicit word they're looking for.
That like she thinks this is the beginning of the coming Messiah, and I was like, okay, cool. In that moment, I started doing like four block breathing, like to try to calm myself down, and I like made the decision. I was like, cool. I think we're gonna have one word conversations maybe for the next however long this takes, which hopefully won't be very long until the resistance wins.
I'm like, I
really can't fucking handle you.
No Oh my god, I'm so happy I'm not home right now. I mean, they're never going to subscribe to this podcast, and if they do, maybe this can be a moment to tell them that I think that what they said was legitimately harrowing and insane.
And just to
be clear, everyone, I'm not about to say anything like upsetting. It's like Christian nonsense. So you don't have to, it's no trigger warnings for this. We were at a dinner earlier this year at my parents' house right before I left, and this was before, I mean, the conflict is ongoing. I'm talking about this is before the on current genocide happening right now, and the current actions,
the current iteration
was like in April. And they were at church, I guess. And like for the last like 3 months, their pastor had been like, and this is like a classic thing in like evangelical circles. Let me make that clear. Like, this isn't like some wacky thing their pastor said. Like, this is like an established narrative in Revelations. He was just like telling them, I guess they were reciting this at dinner to me after the fact, that like, you know, they needed to be watching the skies over Israel this year because like, because a lot of Christians believe that that is where the events described in Revelations will begin, the sounding of the trumpets, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going to try and do the recitation of what it all is, because it's just nonsense.
Crazy.
They were talking about it, and they were saying how like, this is the year that the rapture is coming, and you know, that the events in Revelations are going to come around. And my sister, who has a newborn at the time, she hadn't even turned one yet, was saying in like full earnestness, like looked at us in my eyes and was like, yeah, it's really sad that, you know, insert my niece's name here. I'm not going to be able to see her grow up, but I'll be happy to know that when the events take place later this year in Israel, that, like, you know, I get to be with her in heaven. You know, I won't get to see her grow up because God's taking us all. And I'm just sitting there like,
so crazy.
No, I was like, it was that Winnie the Pooh gif where your soul just like leaves your body. I was
I'm really tired of this idea that we have to take seriously the opinions of these whack job fucking fundamentalists.
Yes, whack jobs.
Like,
whack
literally
jobs.
Including my mother and her friends. Like, love that lady. She raised me. At the same time, girl, anyway.
No, so but this is also, I mean, just really broadly, this is also why I have such beef with, like, organizations like the DSA when, like, we have our annual should the pastors be allowed to pray over right. the meetings beforehand?
It's like, actually, no. And then no. everyone's like, and then people, idiots on Twitter no. are like, oh, like, actually, like, faith is really important. And it's like, you know what? I'm open to that conversation if we were, like, I don't know, if this was, like, Iraq.
Yeah, I'm not open to that conversation, like, with people who are like, preaching
or even like
genocide.
Or maybe like even parts of like the American South that have like a kind of like robust yeah. like black church or something. Obviously it has its problems, but yeah. it's like where it's like maybe like where the religion that we're talking about is not fundamentally connected to like white
yeah.
supremacy.
And I just feel like the religion of the colonizer. Yeah, the religion of the colonizer is like now going to be like central to our meetings.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to say that like cringe. There is a lot of stuff out there that Christians are saying right now. If you have any sense of decency, I really wouldn't consume it because why would you take that on right now rather than the voices of people asking for help?
I don't know if I know any Christians.
I don't know why you would.
Anyway, wait.
Can I pivot? Can I actually pivot?
One more thing, and then let's definitely pivot. Please. But there's one thing I would also advise is like if your phone is becoming a nightmare, which probably like a friend of mine made a comment the other day that it's like it's a good idea to actually designate a little bit of time per day to like check up on news and like yeah. read articles and stuff, and then like. Strategically distance yourself from it for the rest of the time because the news is overwhelming and there's a kind of logic to that being overwhelming.
Yeah.
And also I would highly advise joining the Resistance News Network Telegram channel.
Yeah.
Because it's a good way to get the same information that you might get elsewhere, but like without the Zionist spin, and it's like kind of satisfying. Literally to read Hamas and Hezbollah propaganda in English, like
Amen.
Delivered right to your phone. I'm just like, oh, like understanding that all media is propaganda, so like at least you're getting some from the people who are not the colonizers. Anyway, let's pivot. I have a date in like I don't know, an hour and a half, so I guess we gotta move on to the next segment pretty quickly. But like I'm excited to hang out with him and to have sex with him. Like
yeah.
Like I don't
But are
like,
you trying to date? I
well,
think I was like
of,
going
a
in
a little bit. Actually, yeah. I specifically asked him on a date and I was like and I said like do you want to go out for a drink? To be clear, this is a date.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that we're hanging out thing.
Okay. See, this
and we
is...
treat it as a date. And because I was just like, and he asked me outright, like, what are you looking for? And I was like, we had hooked up a few times before and we had a really good time.
Yeah.
And had a couple good conversations. And I was like, you know, I want to get to know you better. And I think you're really hot. And I want, a man that I can do stuff with during the winter.
Okay.
Like, literally, quite explicitly.
This
and he
is
was
what
like,
I'm going to...
That's cool.
This is what
so
I'm
like,
going to
yeah,
ask
I'm treating
you.
It like a date. I'm treating it like because... a date. And this was a date I asked him specifically. We're going on a date, and we're going to a nice restaurant.
Okay. See, this is what I'm curious about. Because, like, how do you distinguish the dating and the having sex? Because I feel like I've been out of the game for so long.
I don't know if you
that,
do.
Like,
I don't know.
Because that's the
I
thing
that,
is, I'm
I think
like,
the point is that I said it's a date. We're making it a date.
But I'm saying, but even if it's a date, do you think that there are people that are still going out with purely the intention of thinking like we are just having sex?
Maybe, but I think it's like you're not going out necessarily to do that.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. I think it's
maybe it's different
with faggots.
Not to clock you as like
but I think there is something different there. And also it's like, and also the fact that like, and he was like, oh, I wasn't going to, when... like last week he was like, oh, like I kind of like wasn't gonna go, like I was like tired, I don't know. And then I like looked at him and I was like, so you're gonna come over? And he was like, Yeah. And then after we were having sex, he was like, "Ugh, I can't believe I wasn't gonna come over." It's like, yeah, obviously. Like,
yeah. Wait. So you've had sex with him already?
We've had sex before, and this is like, and this was, I think, a good. I'm combining in my mind, the first two hookups together equals one date. Then we had another date, and then now this is the third date. That's my thinking, and as. Which I think is, there's something logical to it.
Yeah.
And also it's like, I think it's actually a good break from form for me, for like the people I've been interested in this past summer, where it's kind of been a lot of like sort of ambiguous situations where like we're testing each other out. There's like a kind of safety net of just being friends.
The ambiguousness.
Whereas this is like, no, we're not friends doing a thing. I'm getting to know you because I'm interested in like you as like a sexual romantic prospect.
Yeah, see, that's what I'm getting back into, I feel like, because I've been out of it for so long. It's like as if everyone, and I'm speaking specifically for guys and like men who are into women, because I feel like they wisened up because of the introduction of like ethical non-monogamy into our sexual practices as like a verb that they can use to things that they otherwise used to be not so much clueless about, but not necessarily as
they didn't have the understanding that they could frame it as a kind of practice.
Yes.
Yeah, it was just a bunch of disaggregated traits, which you could just be like, are you being a fucking dick right now?
It's
like, oh, no, I have a practice.
It's like as if between Jurassic Park 1 and 2, all the dinosaurs got guns, you know? You're like, I'm going to go hunt dinosaurs, but all the dinosaurs have like AK-47s now. And you're like, oh, this is like,
well, this is bad now, I think.
Yeah, it's bad now. And I know we have an episode of Sex and the City to talk about, but I do just want to say also that I heard someone say this on the internet and I want to just parrot it here. I did not come up with this, but that like ethical, I've been seeing a lot of different takes that I'm starting to agree with, that like the concept of like ethical non-monogamy and or like open relationships were invented to destroy the casual nature of hooking up and being promiscuous and sexual. And I'm now, after being on the apps long enough, I'm like,
it's interesting to see a critique of this from a place of from a defense of casual sex.
I think it all ruined casual
like
sex.
No, casual sex, we love casual sex, like that's like,
no, we love casual sex. Like, I need to defend, I'm gonna bring back casual sex and I'm gonna destroy ethical non-monogamy.
That's the thing. I'm having a similar relationship with the experience of cuffing season. I was like, well, it's late October.
Okay.
So I'm asking you out on a date.
Sorry, but this is going to actually tie into the episode, because really I don't have many things to say about this episode aside from like a few top-down observations about Charlotte and Carrie. But one thing I wanted to tell you about, and this is, I just don't know if you've experienced this or if you people think of it the same way. You people, meaning people who still have sex with gay men. Because can I tell you, there has been multiple men that are married who are having open marriages, which is whatever, do your thing, who will like text me at like 1 a.m. And I'm like, sir, you have a wife. Like, why are you texting me at 1 a.m? Like, hey, what are you doing? Ha ha, smiley face emoji. Like, sir, you have a wife. Like, you're in bed with your wife texting, hey, what's up? Ha ha. Like, I'm sorry, but if I was married and that was the kind of marriage I was forced to have, I'd kill myself. Can I just say that right now? I would kill myself. Because like every time guys try to engage with me and they fully have like pictures of their wives on their profiles,
crazy.
I'm just like, the specter of the wife looms over me the whole time, like haunting me. All I can think about is like, what does your wife think about this? Like, does your wife know you're texting a tranny on, what is it, Tinder at like 2 a.m? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't, tell me you have a wife. Bring back cheating. Bring back just having sex with me and not telling me you have a
bring
wife.
Bring back cheating. Yeah. It's like, or just like, don't like entangle me into your scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
okay.
My God.
Let's get to the episode.
Must we? I'm having so much fun just telling you about all the things that I haven't been able to tell you about since the last time I saw you.
It's like we haven't been texting this whole time.
No, but okay, I haven't seen your face.
I took notes. I have notes.
You have notes. So, you have notes.
They're not super robust. I'm looking at my own notes, and I'll just like ask you some questions or whatever. Like, you don't let me do it. So like you can just
interview
relax,
me like a journalist.
Baby,
like
just relax. I'll take care of it. I'll take care of everything.
You're gonna take care of me.
Yeah, don't worry.
Make sure you really eat me out first. I'm super tight today.
Ew. Okay, ew. Sister Dick will make you sick.
Sister Dick will make you sick. I tried flirting with a gay guy, and I was like,
friend
you're
Ben
gay.
Once said that, like, was like on M at a party. He was just like kind of saying that, like, pretty much nonstop. And I was just like, yeah. I'm actually just trying to fuck this guy right now. Like, can you not be saying that to me?
Speaking of Sister Dick, really quick, I'm so sorry. Friend of the show, Riley, who you might know, Riley Late, used to write for The Outline. We were at a super fun club on Saturday. And we had not been in a club environment in a long time. We were both like off the poppers, off the weed, off of everything. And we were listening to Troye Sivan, and we were dancing, and we looked at each other.
Wait,
at
we
one
haven't
point.
Talked about. Wait, we can't. We can't. We have to get.
No,
to,
just wait. I have to tell you this one thing. I just have to tell you this one thing.
No, you're right.
We looked at each other, and we've been friends for like 5 or 6 years, and we've never thought of each other sexually or like done anything like besides like.
Sometimes
oh,
you gotta try it.
Etc. And we both looked at each other fully in the club. I've never done this with someone before. We looked at each other, and I was like, "Should we?" And Riley was like, should we? And I was like, do you want to? And Riley was like, I don't know. And I was like, no offense, I feel nothing. I thought of kissing you and then just got kind of grossed out by it. And Riley was like, yeah, I don't think I want to hook up with you either. And we're like, okay, glad we cleared that up. And just kept
I had that with also my friend Ben. We've known each other forever. And yeah. And like in another lifetime that we like hooked up kind of like in the way that like teenagers do. But like the closest that we've ever come to it since then was like, this is like too much of a story. Like some weird guy that I was fucking at the time.
Yeah.
Who was like really a mess. Like we like ran into him at a bar and we were both making out with him, and then we ended up making out with each other. And then we looked at each other. I was like, all right. And that was funny. And it was like a sash, like, well, that's not happening again on purpose.
Yeah.
Like,
no.
It's just like, it's just his line is like we make out in the way that like straight girls make out for attention. Like it's not anything. It's like that's that. Like
that's literally
it's actually literally so important. Like
that's what Riley and I were both like. I was like it should work. You know, we like get along, everything's fine.
But it won't.
And Riley was like, you know what it is? We're both into men. And I was like, yeah
there's that.
Joan Summers heterosexual reveal 2024. So okay, what is the episode about?
Okay, so this episode is season 2, episode 11.
Evolution. Speaking of fucking gay guys.
Speaking of fucking gay guys, that's what this episode's about. So the episode opens with Miranda at the gynecologist's office, where an incredibly beautiful Cynthia Nixon is telling her doctor that she'll be going off of birth control because she's not having sex anymore since her breakup. She looks stunning. Her makeup is so nice. Her skin is perfect. Her hair is great. It's like the camera settling on her. She's stunning. The gynecologist diagnoses her with a lazy ovary. The right ovary has allegedly stopped producing.
Crazy thing to say.
Because and according to Miranda, it's because it has given up. So this is the line that she says to the other women. She says it's like working on a case that you know is going to settle out of court. Why bother? Side note, this is actually ridiculous. As a corporate lawyer, she probably describes the bulk of what she does. Like most of the cases she does do not involve going to court, but I guess it's for a general audience. This is sort of like the launching off point for her to sort of talk about like, oh, like she's sort of settling, or maybe her body's evolving past the idea of having a real partner. She takes it as a sign. And is distraught about what it says about her dating prospects. She just had a breakup. This is one of those things that, like, when you just have a breakup, like, everything is filtered through the lens of a breakup. Like, she's not actually able to just look at her body as, like, a normal thing that's happening. She's like,
yeah.
Oh, it's reacting to the breakup. Anyway, this is her storyline, kind of, and it's sort of around the theme of like settling. She ends up going on like a kind of like a lame date with a guy who works at her firm or some other firm, whatever. Kind of just because she's like, well, maybe I'm being too picky. I should try other things or whatever. It goes nowhere. It's not her role is basically to open it up for the rest of them, but we don't really get much of storyline from her. She looks stunning the whole episode. And she does a good job of advocating for herself, which is nice. But the conversation's an entree to the other women's storylines. This week, Carrie continues the theme of feeling unwelcome or excluded from Big's life. And here it becomes somewhat literal. She just doesn't have a spot at his place to leave her stuff. So she has to bring around an overnight bag every time, which is like kind of embarrassing. Like she comes across as resigned to it, but...
Yeah, I was not in love with this for her.
It was not. It's not a good arc for her. And the thing that like kind of like the thing that pisses me off about it is that like what she's actually requesting. It's like obviously it's like a small thing that's indicative of a big thing, but at the same time, it's also like it is a small thing. Like he could just make space for her in his apartment if she asked for it, and then. I don't know. I'll talk about this later on in the episode, but like there's a thing that kind of doesn't work for it. But anyway, she ends up leaving things around his apartment, mostly in the bathroom, in a way to feel like it's her place too. Samantha just tells her to talk to him about it, which she should do, but she doesn't, clearly because she knows that it will end in a feeling of rejection and she can't bear that outcome.
100%.
Samantha remarks that she doesn't ever worry about this kind of thing because she never sees men twice. So now she doesn't even wear underwear on their dates. She's a genius.
She's literally everything to me.
In this episode, she's really like, she's kind of every woman. Like, like she has a lot of good lines. Also, the women talk about other things that they've come into possession of from past lovers. Carrie says that half of her record collection has been left behind by men. Do you know, and so I was curious about this because I can't think of anything that I have. Mm-hmm. But do you own anything from an ex that wasn't a gift?
Yes, I do. A bunch of things.
Yeah. Anything interesting?
Let me think. Yeah, actually, I have I guess if I was going to say my favorite thing that I have, it's, do you know what block printing is?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's like where they have, I think it's called block printing, but it's like usually when you're like doing industrial like poster and like screen printing, it's like you have these like screen prints that are in like frames, like wooden frames, and then they're like on this like really, really thin, it's almost like the texture of like vellum is like the only way I can explain it. That's like semi-transparent. And I can't explain what it is. It's like a waxy, like really like waxy, weird material. And it'll have the design on it. And then you paint over that and you like will screen print stuff. And there was this warehouse that went down and out of business in San Francisco. And they tore it down and they like harvested all these like screen printing blocks from the warehouse. And one of them, well, actually two of them, I kept both of them. One of them is green and it has all these like paint marks that just from years of using it as like screen printing. And the logo for it is... like the only way I can explain it, it's like a penguin in a top hat holding another penguin on a top hat, like a popsicle. It's like the only thing I can explain.
I love that.
And it sounds ridiculous, but it's like really old and weathered. And there's like, it's like just like a bunch of these penguins and it's green, the color of the penguins. And I kept that, which we found in like an old like scrapyard. And then I have another one that's like the geologic formations of the Sierra Nevadas that was for like some science textbook.
Cool.
And I have them on my walls. That's probably the most interesting thing.
That is interesting. That's so cool. I don't really have anything.
Yeah. I like literally looked up penguin in a top hat.
I don't even steal things from guys' apartments anymore. That's sad. It's like I've been broken.
I Oh wait, is this? No, that's not it. I literally like was looking for it one time. I was like, I really want to know.
It's like a logo of like a weapon manufacturer. Like it's like something insane.
Can you imagine? It's like something like ridiculous, like truly like not good.
It's like a settlement company.
Yeah. That
operates over the Green Line. Oh my God. I killed myself.
I have this piece of woodworking that we commissioned in one of my old relationships. That was when they were tearing down Silver Lake and all the like vintage or like original homes in Silver Lake in LA. Yeah.
You told me about that.
I have like a table that they made out of one of the old wood scraps. This guy in LA who's like lived in LA for like his, I don't know, since like the 50s or whatever. And I kept that. I stole that. And I stole the screen printings. And then I have this lamp that's like a microscope, like that was like the top of a microscope, like an industrial microscope that I turned into a lamp with some other stuff that we had found. I stole that too because I wanted it.
Good answer. I'm so glad I asked.
Yeah, I have a lot of stuff.
These are like actually interesting houseware items too.
Yeah, it's like a lot of furniture is what I have.
That's the best thing to get out of a relationship.
Actually, I do have some. I do have an old sweater that's like the perfect sweater and. Every winter I would hide it from my ex because I wanted to wear it instead because he would never wear it. And then I'd be like, I want it. So I would take it home and then I would never wear it around him.
Yeah, I have my ex's and a hoodie of my ex's, but that's like it. Like we didn't really do a lot of, I didn't really get a lot of his stuff. I wore a lot of his things like while we were dating, but like, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah, everything else has been that I can think of that's his has been like a gift. Anyway, that's that.
Yeah,
I'm trying to think, how much more do I want to say? But I guess there's more to get into this later. Oh, Charlotte's storyline is one of my favorites.
It's one of my favorites. And it's also one of the saddest because this episode, in hindsight, is literally just homophobia.
She could have had it all.
It could have been her greatest relationship. And can I just say, it is the dream of women to have a gay guy. I'm sorry. Right. Like, I'm sorry. Right. He's gay, and the most you have to put up with is that he won't kill mice for you.
He's a little fruity, but apparently he Doja Cat line?
Yeah.
That's everyone thinks he's gay, but he's stroking like he's straight. Period.
Yeah, literally.
Period.
He's fucking you down. It's the best dick you've ever had in your life.
He's a pastry chef. He has a nice apartment. He's funny.
He likes watching Martha
during
Stewart.
Sex. So like, funny.
Like, I'm sorry. That is the dream man. Like, that's... Yeah. My dream boyfriend.
Bad for her. It's bad for her.
And she goes, and the line that they end up breaking up over because a mouse comes in to his kitchen and it's stuck in a trap, and he like has like a girly, I'm saying in quotes, freak out.
I mean,
and Carrie's
girly,
voiceover was like, what was it? Charlotte learned her masculine side was not as evolved as so-and-so's feminine side. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
What I that learned is while watching this, I was like, you say. Know what? I love gay guys because to me, I'm like, that's not a problem.
Not a problem.
Not an issue. And I was like, you know what? Maybe I just really love gay guys. Period.
No. Period.
Good thing.
Period.
Good thing I'm dating them because I like them. Yeah, I think there's not a ton more to say about this. I think she has a couple funny lines. One of them is that like she can't figure out if it was a date or not. This is so mean. She's like, I was wearing my glasses. I can't tell if it was a date because in her mind she already believes he was gay. And then they like went on a date and then they like and then boom, he gives her a hot kiss goodnight. Like it's so me coded. Like I saw it. I was like, this is so me.
That's so you.
And then as soon as she starts trying to figure it out, what are we? Then it kind of starts to fall apart, which is like, okay, me. Anyway. According to Carrie, the real question of this is he a straight gay man or is he a gay straight man, which she describes as a new strain of heterosexual male spawned in Manhattan as a result of overexposure to fashion, exotic cuisine, musical theater, and antique furniture. This is like so like a product of its time and place.
It's such a product of its time of like the it's like proto metrosexual discourse, which by the way,
the versions of Straggets that we have now look completely different now.
I will just say that the most we got out of the metrosexual phase of the internet, by the way, specifically in relationship to pop punk people, is that men who are more likely to describe themselves as metrosexual would have 100% confirmed allegations against them by 2019 is like the most that came out of metrosexual.
Confirmed allegations.
The
gay straight man is a man with confirmed allegations.
Confirmed allegations.
And decent taste about stuff. Okay, that's... There's not a ton more to say about this. I'm trying to think. The other only note I have for it is that I wrote literally... Charlotte's faggot BF playing Cher during sex, LMFAO king.
My thing is like, my thing is like that song in particular, which is Life After Love.
Insane choice. I love him.
No. I just would be like, the rhythm of that song, the rhythm of that song in a bedroom is odd to me. Like,
I bet that's not necessarily crazy good pussy. I don't care.
No, I'm just saying that's not necessarily that's like, that's not the tempo I would go for.
Which is not to say that he's good at sex, but what I mean is like this is okay. So like I avoid essentialism in so many areas of my life, and yet I do believe there is a thing that exists that is good pussy.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And I think this guy probably has it.
Good pussy is genderless.
I think he just got good pussy.
Good pussy is genderless. Wait,
and
question.
And she stumbled into it. I'm excited for her, but sad that she lost it.
Oh, do you use Spotify?
I do, yeah.
Okay, open Spotify with me.
No. I know that song.
Do you have a sex playlist?
I don't.
You don't have a sex playlist? Like,
no,
you don't have, like,
just... songs.
Okay, well, okay,
sometimes.
Fine. Then tell me one of the songs that you play.
This doesn't work because I listen to, like weird techno shit, and sometimes it's just like bossa nova.
You listen to bossa nova during sex?
Sometimes if it sets the scene. Or sometimes, okay, this is actually the closest I have to a sex playlist is there's a SoundCloud mix from like I think 2017. It's like an OVO radio one, and it's like Sade. It's like an all Sade mix with a bit of Drake in it. That one fucking eats. That's the closest I have to a sex playlist. But most of the time, I also sort of just like want to hear it. Like I want to hear the sex stuff. I want to be able to like listen to people's breathing.
Yeah.
And I do a lot of dialogue. So I don't know. I don't really.
You do. I love
it
you do a lot of dialogue.
I do a lot of dialogue.
I'm looking
we do
at
a lot
my
of interfacing.
Sex. Wait, I love. Okay, wait. My sex playlist. I'm looking at it right now. I'm just.
What are you
thinking
what
like
you
immediately off of
just
it?
Just because like I don't want I've learned that I will get emotional associations or stuff. I'm easily reminded of other things and I'm like, I don't want that.
Yeah, there's like Michelle Nadejicello, Jamie X. Oh my god,
I thrusted I was thrusting to the rhythm of a song and I like kind of went too hard and I could tell I like kind of like hurt the back of some guy's throat a little bit and I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have done that.
Oh, you were because you were face fucking him. This sex playlist I think was like 2019 because there's like Kalela, The Avalanches, Go Gina by SZA.
That's a crazy thing to put on a sex playlist.
I don't know.
I mean,
what
I get
I
it. It's
doing.
Sort of vibe wise, but the problem is that you also don't know what everyone else's associations.
You're
with
making
these songs
me high, Toni Braxton.
Okay, that period.
Okay, no, this is actually know. Okay. I know exactly
Forever
by Charlie XCX. Crazy song to put on your.
I also just like rather someone else kind of do the curating, or I'll do an album. That
okay,
I know will be fine.
Are you
especially
listening to
Lonely
Song during sex?
No, I don't know. I might let him make a decision, but then if I don't,
I heard
like, Troye
Sivan in the club, and I got it. Everything that we've been saying made sense to me after I heard.
Honestly,
in the club.
No, I'm actually really on side. Like I actually like support him now. Like,
did we get
as long as
actually,
he stays silent on Israel? I'm happy.
Yeah, just say nothing about Israel
anything,
or South Africa.
Yeah,
nothing about Israel
says
or South
anything
Africa.
Anything about Israel, I'll have to kill him with my bare hands. Unfortunately, which
yeah,
I think
no.
would be kind of hot.
Did you know,
I texted my friend like, oh, what do you think about new Troye? And then he just wrote back, I want to top him. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. Well, don't
okay, good
say
answer.
That in public. Don't say that in public. He's very, very, very sensitive about trying to tell everyone he's a top now. So, you know.
Okay. Sure. Me too. Like, I'll still bottom
Wait,
for a couple of people.
Did you,
whatever.
Did, Did you know
I want to top him? That doesn't mean he has to top. He has to.
No, I know. I was just making a joke because he gets so sensitive about it now. He was like, yeah, everyone he's so assumed sensitive. I, does he goes, like everyone assumed I was a bottom because of Bloom.
But yeah, literally, it's like, well, you should have thought that. You should have had another song that was called like Fuck.
Can you please?
Or
can
thrust.
You? We're gonna be done. We're gonna be done in just a second. Open the chat.
No, we can do a little more. We can do a little.
No. I know. I just wanted to. I want to show you this. Can you please look at this page that I sent you? Because did you know Troye Sivan launched a candle company?
Yes, and
perfume are like literally 1.69 flu 50 milliliters of perfume, $145.
He's such an insane faggot. $145.
Really,
and it's all like stupid Yiddish names. I'm just like, this is actually like really funny.
Yeah. The pool aromatic candle is $89 candles.
There's a light motion. The dreidel is $1,601.
Yes, is it? It's in. I'm what? Sorry. It's insane. It's insane. Like, you've lost the plot.
Like, you need to be fucking for real.
$1,178, Australian dollars. That's a lot of money. The oil burner is $300.
Yeah, it just looks really. It looks really ridiculous.
It's ridiculous, and I also am like, do you have a audience for this? Can you please go to this?
Who are the people who are getting this? Like, who is buying this? Literally, it's
no.
So
my favorite
bizarre.
Is the pool eau de parfum. If you scroll over it, the image being of some guy's happy trail and dick.
Yeah,
I'm like, I'm like, what is happening?
It's so stupid.
This is curated. To like the only the most mentally ill of gay guys, like,
it's like only the highest society of London and New York City cocksuckers.
I also just need to know
absolutely the most advertising job pilled fucking faggots. And I can think off the top of my head someone who belongs to this market, and they have amazing pussy. All right, now.
You,
not it's would not you me. Descri-
wait, wait.
It's
as someone, me. As someone who's been bottoming more recently, like a lady.
By bottoming more recently, I mean I did it once, and we were.
Would
flipping.
You? Would you describe you as having good pussy?
I don't think so.
Wait, you don't think you?
I don't think so.
Would you say so? You're confidently saying you're a better top than a better bottom.
I'm a way better top than bottom. I'm an excellent top. The other day, someone who I hooked up with the first time said I was life changing.
Life changing.
This person, I'll bottom for like.
That's
I'll
usually the kind of like, reviews my head get. My head, yeah. My like.
I'll bottom
like head
for like
10 get.
Minutes. I'll be like, that was fun. Thanks. Let's flip.
You're like, okay, love and
I'm
light.
Like, I'm
you're
like,
not
no,
as good
I'm
as
like,
this at me.
No, it's just like, how cool that I did that for you. That was fun. All right, next. Like, I'm like, it's more, to me, it's more just a way of getting close to someone as opposed to an actual sensory experience that I enjoy. And so because I don't enjoy it, I'm not really giving it my all.
Okay. I'm sorry, Troye Sivan, I just can't stop thinking about this. About TLY, Yiddish, to long years and to good years. Suling Yor, I don't know how to pronounce it, is an independent reflection of self, sanctuary, and heritage from two brothers in Carlton, Australia. A timeless exploration of beauty, belonging in emotion, refinement, romance, an ongoing collaboration and treasuring of the local individual, both person and place.
Crazy.
To long years and good
oh
years.
Oh my god.
I've always too, really been too, at my happiest when I'm much. Creating. I'm always
literally,
been. To me, there's something magical about the process. Collaboration, play, exploration. I have been reflecting on a lot while traveling and living overseas. To
I
me,
need to fuck
what
a
makes
guy
home?
This annoying ASAP.
Expression, art, heritage, friends, objects. How do I want the space to feel, smell, be lit?
Art,
heritage, friends, objects.
Yeah. These are my demands. These are our demands. We will
expression,
not release hostages. Art. Our demands are met. Expression, art. Object. All right. All right. Let's go back to the Carrie storyline.
Oh,
Okay, so
no,
Carrie is
Mr. Big is buying Suling York, and he's giving it to Carrie, and Carrie's like, what the fuck is this? He's like, I found it on my business trip, and she's like, what am I supposed to do with this? It smells like ass. And he's
it smells like gay guys.
He was like, I don't know, a gay guy in a shop sold it to me. Don't you like that kind of stuff? And she's like, no, this you is like, idiot.
This is if it was made today, but not in just like that. Do you know what I mean?
If
they were their age in the original series. This would be a feature. This would be actually one of the sponsored product placement.
No, this is Troye Sivan is actually in the universe of In Just Like That.
Yeah, he's in the In Just Like That cinematic universe.
He's best friends with the jewelry designer that bought Carrie's apartment for like $100. Like,
and it's actually the same character that he plays in The Idol.
Actually, The Idol does exist in the End. Just like that. Listen. Carrie's gonna come up. Miranda's gonna come back from wherever she is, from the UN, and her son is gonna be fucking.
Imagine them saying the word Palestine on that.
No, her son is gonna.
She's looking at the UN. She's like, we have to deal with the situation in Palestine.
Yeah. I will say, I think, And Just Like That, Miranda is making the wrong choice in history
She's definitely on the wrong side of history.
No, but Miranda comes back from the UN late at night, and Brady's fucking Charlotte's daughter, and they're listening to I'm Just a Freak, and you know, like, she goes back and Charlotte's daughter's singing it to Brady, and they have to have an uncomfortable conversation about boundaries. And he comes in and shops at Charlotte's gallery like Sam Smith did. You know,
that was
we never
that happened,
you know, we never talked about that, right? The way the like body, listen, I'm not trying, I'm
that
not gonna
so resurrect discourse,
but the body positivity art gallery that Charlotte gets hired, and because it's body positive, they're like, we have to fly in Sam Smith for this scene.
I was like, Sam Smith was probably just like right there, and then like with whoever they were hanging out with that day. And they're like, now we're on this show. Like, I think this whole thing was so.
It was odd.
I also hate a thing that they do. I also hate a thing that people do on TV where it's like, this piece of art is good. Like, any kind of art of any kind of thing. And it's like just not good. You're like looking at a thing being bad. But like, for the bit to work, everyone has to pretend that it's good. I'm just like, this is not. Luckily, we don't have to worry about that with Carrie because her writing is good.
Yeah,
I'm kidding. And actually, at times it is good. I think she does a good job this week, though. Her column is so doomer. I think it's just because she has like a fucked up conversation. There's actually, here's the tie-in. So the Carrie storyline, she's been leaving stuff at his apartment surreptitiously, and then eventually, like, he comes over to her place and returns her stuff in a bag. And it forces her to confront him with the fact that she intentionally left the things there. The problem is that the conversation itself isn't bad, but like she takes the wrong tack. Like she adopts this weird pleading tone and is like kind of automatically on the defensive. I think because she anticipates rejection, when what she's actually saying is like, I want to leave some of my stuff there, and it makes me feel like I have a place at your apartment. Which, if she had just said that, for him to be like, no, would actually truly demonstrate how insane he is. But I think because she's anticipating that reaction, she ends up, I guess, like giving him room to get bogged down in weird details. Like, it's like, well, you could leave stuff at your place. Like, I don't want to. But the conversation is hard to watch. The point they end up at is her asking the question, what is the ideal living situation for two people in a relationship?
Yeah.
Which is not the same question or issue that was brought up earlier with her friends. It's a different question. And it has a much different set of stakes than what she expressed earlier. Which is just, you know, I want to feel like I have a place in your home and life. And I want to be able to leave things at your home for my own convenience. Instead, we've ended up in this weird zone of cohabitation.
Yes.
Almost accidentally. And now it sort of makes sense that Big gets spooked and adopts a kind of territorial posture of separate togetherness. His ideal situation is, we're together when we want to be, we're apart when we want to be. But that's not what she wants. And then she feels unsatisfied and angry because the thing that she actually wanted to talk about, she didn't get to talk about. But what I think, I think that sort of general principle, we're together, we want to be, we're part, we want to be, something she probably isn't opposed to. But like, her actual central concern remains unaddressed, and so she's still frustrated. But now she doesn't know why. She ends up kind of getting into this tailspin, wondering if she's stuck on some outdated idea of interdependence. It makes her feel like she's more clingy or needy than she really is. And what she actually wants is a very basic, normal need. Like the framing makes it sound like she's invading his space when that's not the case at all.
I mean,
it pissed me off so bad.
This is one of those things that, like, I feel like, more broadly now, this is like something that it's interesting. Okay, how do I frame this? It's interesting how much the conversation about domesticity has like stayed the same and changed. Yeah. And like this, I will say it, this conversation between her and Big is obviously, honestly, a conversation about labor and class dynamics at its core. Because she's saying like, I have to like spend money to look like this, the way that you like me to look. And I have to commute to your place and schlep this shit around and buy these things and do work, do labor to perform the kind of woman that you want to be with. And you do not allow me any sort of foothold in your domestic life, in your like property, in anything. You know, like you want me to have what's mine is mine and what's yours is yours, but I don't have anything. You know, like you're a fucking finance guy and I write a column and buy shoes on a stolen credit card, you know, like it's an interesting conversation. And it's interesting how, like, I think in like a more intimate context, it's strange to look at this conversation and what it would look like now, because I think this conversation now is like, I don't know if we're having conversations about like, what do you leave at people's places? But we are having conversations about boundaries and like when we get to be alone. If you look at the context of like an open relationship, people are like, when are you with me? When are you with someone else? Like the whole, I want to be alone and you want to be alone at certain points and we want to be together. Mm-hmm. And then now you also have the introduction of like, well, what are you doing when you're alone? You know, how alone are you really? Who are you alone with? And what kind of relationship do they have to your domestic space also? I don't know, I just was thinking about that, I think, because I'm fielding so many requests from people already in open relationships.
Yeah, I know.
I think it's girlfriend in another part of the city. I'm like, I don't know, I just, these are the kinds of conversations I'd be having now. It was like something that made me think a lot this episode.
Yeah, no, I think it's also like the way that he navigates this and turns it into a big conversation about boundaries in a way that's like, that it's like bigger than what it is and also smaller than what it is.
Yeah.
I think also like
he flattens what her point is a lot.
Yeah. And I think it's also like, this is a pattern we've identified on the pod before with them.
Yeah.
It's the same shtick as that line that you often point out that occurred at the beginning of the season. It's like, he knew I wanted to talk to him and he was making it as difficult as possible.
Yeah.
Like he sees what he's doing, or at least he sees what she's doing, and he remains deliberately uncurious about her and uninvested in her well-being.
Yeah.
And it's the same attitude that's resulted in a lot of fights, including in the previous episode, where you can tell she's upset about something big, but he doesn't ask her what it is. And men always do this.
Always.
And it's a way to make women seem and feel crazy. And it fucking works here. And then you look at like what she starts writing in her column, and it's like this whole doomer thing of like, oh, have we evolved past romance and relationships? And it's like, no.
No.
This man is just not listening to you. You're just dating a man who doesn't like you.
Okay, can I also say the interesting part here? This is something women do too a lot. I think because like men condition you to expect less than the bare minimum, you know? Subterranean levels of what could be described as the minimum. And I've seen a lot of people do this. I also have done this, to be clear, where so she has this setup where it's like, he doesn't let me leave any of my stuff here. And she's like, I need my hair dryer because I need to blow dry my hair. Have you noticed my hair has changed? And he's like, doesn't notice that her hair has changed, for one. And then he deflects the conversation by saying, oh, well, your hair looks nice as it is right now, right? Like, not only have I not paid attention to you, but now that you're
an idiot,
I'm
going to pacify you with a compliment.
Now that you're telling me what your needs are, I'm telling you that your needs don't matter. She goes into the bathroom and immediately the show sets you up to think like she's going to open a drawer and he's going to have secretly bought the kinds of things that she wanted, right? Like she's going to open
but
that drawer.
Doesn't.
No,
he doesn't.
No, listen to this. So she opens the drawer and so you're mad. Like, you're like, oh, there's going to be like a hair dryer in there. There's going to be like a panty or whatever she needs in there. And there's not, but there's a photo of them, right? And in
that
moment,
face down she, and covered up.
Yeah. She makes such so insulting. Conscious choice to impose a set of decisions on that photograph on his part to be like, oh, and this is what her process probably looks like. Oh, he doesn't think about me in that way, or oh, he doesn't know that I need these things. But, you know, there's a photo of us in the drawer and he sees it every time he opens the drawer in the morning. And like, that's enough, you know, like that's him like thinking of me in his own way, you know? And in that moment, she's like, okay, I'll get back into bed with him. And then the episode ends with her forfeiting that power. And I remembered in this moment how many times you do that where you're like, I am telling somebody my needs. I'm telling them, I don't like this. I need this. Can you help me with this? And they're not meeting those things. But then they like, I don't know,
do some other shit.
Bring you flowers. Bring you flowers that you're going to have to cut and find a vase for. Or like, they'll like, oh, I'm going to like, oh, I know I didn't do this thing that I need you to do, but like, let's go to dinner tonight, right? Like, I'll make it up to you. And you're like, okay, well, I didn't need dinner. I didn't need flowers. I needed this other thing. And you'll think to yourself like, oh, look, he's trying. See, this is him trying. Okay, maybe he didn't get it right this time, but he's trying.
Yeah.
And I'm here to tell you, women, he's not trying. He's pacifying
thing,
you.
This is the thing that I think
you're
would be
being
kind
manipulated.
That's something that I think would be kind of cute or sweet if they were a new couple.
Yes.
But this is their second time around.
Yes.
And she dumped him already. And that's something that pisses me off.
Yes. Because
it's like, actually, like, he should be working hard to keep her. And the fact that he isn't is like, oh, he doesn't give a fuck about her.
No,
he doesn't give a
fuck. And it's crazy. This is how we get offensive. Like hot girl, ugly boyfriend syndrome. Because you're like, how could this girl be in this relationship? Which is something a lot of people used to say about me. And it's like, because she has been taught to accept this. She has been taught to think that
or
this is what she deserves.
There are probably some cases where the ugly guy is nice to her and actually respects her needs.
Oh, no, no, no. I mean ugly
both,
guy.
Either
in
those
this,
things.
Yeah, I'm saying ugly
either
guy.
These,
in the,
either these parallel. There's two ways to be an ugly guy in a relationship with a hot girl.
Yeah.
One
yeah.
is that one is that the hot girl's been beaten into emotional submission to a set of ugly behaviors. And the other is that there's a guy
who has good pussy.
External audiences, but he's got good pussy. oh, I can do a quickie on the Sam thing. Sam's storyline is basically like
also transgender.
Very transgender. It's a meditation on the fact that desire is often stronger than pride.
Yes.
We often borrow from our desires to buttress our pride.
And
Samantha,
she bucks pride and then is still humiliated in the end.
Yeah. She's wooed once again by a man who dated her, then dumped her before, with the idea that she's gonna flip the script on him this time. But yeah, she just likes hanging out with him and she likes his attention and she allows herself to be suckered in. And then he ends up kind of like dumping her unceremoniously again, which sucks. But I think it's also like, you know, there's also a moment where she's like, she says like, oh, like he used to be such a good lover or something. She's talking to Carrie. And then she's like, oh, but I can't believe I thought he was so good. I'm better than him now. And it's like, how interesting, like she's saying that she has to say that he's a bad lover to make herself feel better about the fact that she still wants his approval and affection. Like,
yeah,
this is, I think, like a really like, yeah, like we've all been there. The thing that her storyline, the note that her storyline ends on is that there's a line in Carrie's voiceover. It's like, it dawned on Samantha that her desire for revenge was not as strong as her desire for Dominic. First of all, kill myself. you can never go back because back isn't there for you. But because not because back isn't there for you, but because going back, it's a place that you don't actually really belong. It's not really safe. But her takeaway from this experience is that she hadn't evolved past having feelings, which is actually kind of a nice reminder and is like a real like girl who's going to be OK type thing to say. But it's also it's like, yeah, like that's something like, you know, like actually I do still care about him and it's OK. Like I deserve to be cared for and it sucked that this guy didn't care for me and I wanted that to happen. Oh, well. So that's it. That's all I've got for them. There's also like, there's a couple good lines. Smith has a lot of good lines in this episode. They weren't super important, so I didn't pull them out. But like, for those watching along at home, like, there's more to this episode than meets the eye. All the women look really stunning in it.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah,
they all look true, beautiful women.
Yeah.
Well. I guess that's it. You have a date, right?
I have a date, and you know what? I'm gonna say a horrible sentence. I want to get in a quick pump before we go. Quick pump.
Okay.
Quick pump. So I gotta go do that.
I'm a lady. I gotta go do that. I don't know what that means. I'm a woman.
I have to. It's a quick workout. So yeah.
Anyway, I love you. Thank you for podcasting.
I love you. I missed you.
I missed you too.
And I missed you, listeners.
No, you didn't.
Mwah. Well, less.
Less. Goodbye. Okay.
Mwah. Bye. Already know what my addiction is.